Welcome to Harness Up with Haste Draft Horses and Mules, where we talk all things related to these magnificent animals. From their history and uses to training and care, we cover it all. Join us as we chat with experts and enthusiasts in the field, share stories and tips, and explore the world of draft horses and mules. Whether you're a seasoned owner or just curious about these gentle giants, this podcast is for you. So harness up and join Haste Draft Horses and Mules for some lively discussions about these God-given creatures.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Harness Up with Haste Draft Horses and Mules. Today I've got a guy here I'm just super happy to have on, Mr. Ken McNabb.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yes sir, pleasure. Ken is a definition of a traditional cowboy, and he's also been compared to a modern-day Roy Rogers. Just a humble man, and I'm so glad to get to talk to him today. So, Ken, tell us a little bit about where you're from and about you a little bit.
Sure. I tell people I live about, 10 miles from where I was born. I haven't got real far in life. But we live in the little town of Lovell, Wyoming, which is north central. If you're familiar with Wyoming, almost nobody's familiar with Lovell, but it's just west of Sheridan, over the mountain and down on the other side, and it's just east of Cody, about 80 miles between each one of them. And we ranch right at the bottom of the mountains, right at the bottom of the Bighorns, between the Bighorns and the Bighorn River. We've got a place there down on the river. And so we run a bunch of horses and a couple hundred cows and just try to have fun and enjoy the life we live.
And an absolute beautiful place.
We do. We're very blessed. Wyoming's a pretty state. It has big vistas and blue skies. And one of the cool things about the United States is every place is pretty.
Every place.
But we're blessed where we live. We sure like it.
I was talking to a guy this weekend at Road to the Horse where I met you. He said, I've traveled so much. I don't know where I like the best because I like it all.
Right. You know, people ask me all the time, have you gone overseas? And I tell them, I haven't seen everything there is to see here yet. I don't have anything against going overseas, but we've got such an amazing place that we call home.
It's unreal.
This country is amazing, and I love to see it, and I haven't seen it all. So
God bless the USA.
Absolutely. Every inch of it.
You're a patriotic guy. I know you love your country.
I do. I tell people, I made that slogan up for t-shirts 10, 12 years ago, but God, family, America, horses, and that's kind of the way I look at it. My kids come home one day. They were down helping some neighbors, and they come home, and the neighbor gal, she used this line all the time. And so they said, Dad, she made us these peanut butter banana sandwiches on toast, and he said, they were to die for. And I said, hold on, son. You die for God and your country and your family.
Yes, sir.
You can fight over food, but don't die for it.
It's right.
But you die, you keep your priorities straight. You die for your God, you die for your family, and then you die for your country. But let's not die over food.
One thing I noticed about Road to the Horse this weekend that just really blew my mind. A guy was at your booth praying with another guy, and that just really touched me. Like, man, you don't see that a lot. They were sitting there praying.
You know, I was visiting with Clinton Jones, who's the wagon boss for Pitchfork, and his wife outside of the Texas Roadhouse in Georgetown. We were all there, and they showed up trying to get a table too, and so we were just standing there visiting. And that's what Mrs. Jones said to me. She said, I didn't expect this. She said, you know, at home, we're pretty comfortable praying in the restaurants around town and whatnot, but she said, I didn't expect to show up in Lexington, Kentucky, and hear so much scriptural reference throughout the weekend, or the reference to our Lord and Savior, or to have every day open in prayer. And that's a tribute we need to give to Western horsemen.
Okay.
That's not Road to the Horse of old. That's new. Matt West, Dan James do a really good job. They're both devout Christian men, and Tammy Sorens and the whole Road to the Horse crew, they bring that with them. I appreciate it. It's really cool. And of course, we've kind of got to be on the north edge of the Bible Belt anyway, so the people are mostly comfortable with it. And it was such a patriotic venue this year.
It was great.
That I think even the people who weren't comfortable with it realize that it's our God-given right. And those of us that were comfortable with it, that's what we're going to do. So it was a lot of fun. It was a blessing to be a part of that whole feeling, that whole spirit there.
Yep, you done great. I watched you. It was a great event. You done good. Your horse you picked done good, and we was real happy with watching you.
Thank you. You know, I said on Facebook this morning, if I had that pick to do over again, I'd surely do it different. That was a tough nut to crack.
It was.
Talk about three-day horses and lifetime horses. So when you look at Road to the Horse, you're not looking for a lifetime horse. You're looking for a three-day horse.
That's true.
And I put a ton of effort into that, and I just pegged him wrong. It was very humbling because both of my sons picked different horses, and the wagon boss there, Clint Jones, said, yeah, either of those horses would have been really good, a lot better than what you picked. big. So it was a bit humbling. You know, we, as a family, we worked through that process. And what I came up with, when you're looking at colts, and these colts have been running out on the range, they're not halter broke. He didn't lead until halfway through the finals on Sunday.
I noticed that.
You know, that's, we broke him to lead trying to get out of the round pen. And then he led really nice, super, super smart, but he didn't have a lot of handling. He'd been handled a little bit as a baby and turned back out, and they run him through an alley and crowd an alley and vaccinate and deworm and take care of that kind of stuff. These aren't barnyard raised colts. These are range colts. The colt's real smart, but not real handled.
Yeah.
If I had that to pick over again, I would, but what a neat horse, and he really came through.
Oh, yeah.
I spoke to the president of Pitchfork at the toga party, which that was a first for me. Oh. I had never been to a toga party. Don't know that I ever need to go to another one. It wasn't bad. It was actually fun, and I would say there was maybe 10% of the people there were actually dressed in costume. The rest of us went just like we were.
Cowboy up.
Yeah, it was actually pretty fun. But anyways, at that VIP toga party that they did, I talked to the president of Pitchfork, and he said, well, how come you didn't talk to our guys about our horses? And I said, well, I didn't know we were allowed to. Well, he said, everybody else did. I said, well, that's on me. I did not know that we were allowed to talk to you guys about these horses. And so I then went and I talked to Clint. And Clint said, Ken, you cannot argue with that colt. He said, I'm going to tell you right now, the Rockin' W mares produce colts that are really great ranch horses, but you can't argue with them, not once, not a little bit. And that's when I had already discovered that colt would not tolerate you. If he thought you were bullying him, it was game on. You had to present everything to him as a question and let him find the answer. And if you do that, then he would just roll with it and go, and he would look. And that's why he was so great in the obstacles. I didn't shove him through any obstacle. I rode him up to him and presented him and then just waited on him. I didn't let him have a way out, but I never pushed. I just let him go, and he just right on through.
That was your highest score of the competition too.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, he handled that stuff so good. There was a lot of great things. There was things I didn't love. I hated when the colt bucks in the first couple rides, because that's on me, not on the colt. It means I didn't take my time, and I knew that. We got 3 hours.
You don't have time.
Yeah.
I was real surprised with the whole thing, watching Donald and Tick, and what about the wild card?
You know what? What a great young man.
Awesome.
C.D. Wilcox, all heart, all try, all cowboy. But again, I was being humbled and learning from people around me and realizing mistakes I'd made in not seeking out more information. And CD was walking around. He ended round one without even getting the halter on. And what really impressed me is he was going to any trainer there and saying, what's your opinion? What should I do? What can I do? That's pretty darn humble. His dad, or his father-in-law rather, is two-time world champion the last 2 years. So that can't be easy. Your father-in-law, who is a two-time world champion, is your pen wrangler. He's sitting outside your pen. Things aren't going well. The pressure's mounting. And rather than bull up and sell up, that kid started, he got humble and he started walking around saying, hey, what can I do? And I tell people all the time, I can't tolerate an arrogant horseman.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody ever got to the point in life where somebody called them horseman without asking somebody a million questions.
That's true.
And that's what that kid was doing. He was walking around there asking questions, and he did a darn good job.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
I was amazed. And Donald, too, I talked to him a lot. Just a super nice guy.
That was a cool thing. I've been really blessed in my experiences with Road to the Horse. I've heard other years of people bickering and whatnot. I've always really had a good time with the other competitors. And nothing for nothing. I don't want to take anything away from other years. But I would say this year was the first year where I thought the whole cast, if you will, the whole group of competitors, everybody was so willing. It was like, we were talking about it in the truck today, it was like going to a rodeo. And that was a different experience, you could tell at first, for Tick. Tick, coming from a more English background, he wasn't ready for the cowboy mentality of, here, take my saddle. Here, you can have my halter. Or, let me pull your cinch. Or whatever it is. You know, you go to a bronc ride and you forgot your bronc halter. Some guy's going to say, well, here, you can borrow mine. I bucked off. You can have mine. Or, all right, I scored good. You can have mine. And he, you know, I don't think he was ready for that, but he had the right nature for it. He had the right spirit for it. And so once he figured out that's okay, he dove in. And Donald is just so organic. He's just so natural to everything, and you know, just a neat, neat guy. Like a ton of fun. That was my take.
It was great. That was my first Road to the Horse.
Oh, really?
I'd never been to one. She wanted me to go. Like, you need to come to this. So I'm glad I did. I so enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. No, it was. That was a good one to go to, because there was plenty of action.
Tell us about your family. I met one of your sons there.
Yep.
Kurt.
Yep. Kurt.
Yep. I met Kurt. Him.
So Kurt's our oldest son. We have two boys. When we got married, we figured we'd have between 6 and 12 kids. And God said, two of me was all that the world needed. He said, those two came out so much like me. He said, we're done. So Kurt's 24 years old. And he is, I said there in a demo, his first thought conscious was cow. I know that. I know that as the doctor handed him to his mother, he was saying cow. You know, like somewhere in his brain, he was thinking, where's a cow? I'm going to rope something. And that's the way he's always been. Like from little on, we've got pictures at home of him and me doctoring cattle out in the pasture. And he's 5 years old. And I would head stuff and get it shut down. And then he'd come in and lay a heel trap and I'd pull it into it and I'd keep it real slow. But I didn't have anybody else to help me. I put him on super good horses. I really believe in mounting your kids. Like I think mounting your kids well is the most important thing you can do for them. Mm-hmm. And so he never had a bad horse growing up. He never had a bad horse until his confidence was there to where he could handle it. But we've got pictures of him roping that young and doctoring cattle. He's a super good cattleman and really good dog trainer. Works as a pickup man. Spent the last couple of summers picking up in Cody. He got started. He always wanted to pick up. And a couple of years ago, we got invited to help produce one series of a television show that was called Guts and Glory.
Okay.
And it was the run-up to the American Rodeo. And so he got a chance to pick up there and got to work with a guy out of Oklahoma, Dustin Farrell, who's a really good kind of backcountry pickup man. He's not somebody the whole world knows, but he's picked up a million rodeos. And Dustin really fed into Kurt and really taught him a bunch and put a post during that. He put a post. He got to pick up with J.B. Mooney one day.
Okay.
During that, J.B. was there. He was the host of the show, and they let him pick up one day. And Kurt mounted him on one of his horses, and J.B. picked up with Kurt. Yeah. At that time, Kurt, so that was a real highlight. Well, that show got him an opportunity then, because he was seen on that show, got him an opportunity to work the Cody Knight show. And his goal this year is to get his pro card. He's a phenomenal pickup man. He's got a natural instinct. I don't just say that because I'm his dad. I say that because every cowboy that he picks up comes back and says he was there. Kids that hang up, he saved my life. One of my favorite stories, last summer, it was kind of a debacle, and he was the only pickup man. There was supposed to be another pickup man, but he didn't show. There's a kid standing there, been saying he wanted to pick up all summer. And so Kurt told this kid, he said, Austin, get on my horse. And Austin said, what do I do? He said, just keep them pushed up behind me and pray we don't have a hang up. And so they went out, and the first kid out hung up bad. And so Kurt showed me the video. Austin's not where he's supposed to be. And Kurt's on a big dun horse that we have. He calls Charlie. And he runs up next to this bucking horse, and he drops the reins over the saddle horn and just leans over and grabs the rigging and shoves down. And he's so dang big. The bucking horse is running and bucking, and he just shoves down with one hand and lifts that kid up and pops the hand out and sets him down. And Charlie's not something Grandma wants to ride.
Okay.
No, Charlie's dangerous, like spooky, jittery, kick you. But when you get him to action, he come off a ranch in New Mexico, and when you get him into action, he's as solid as they get. And he stayed with that bucking horse like they were glued together. Well, Kurt just has that natural instinct like that. And Trent's much the same. Trent works on a couple of big ranches up in Montana.
Okay.
He works for the Padlock Ranch. He's 20 years old. And then he works also for Sunlight Ranches. They work for them a lot. Sunlight, they were the owners of Sinclair Oil.
Okay.
And so they belong to a man named Earl Holden, now belongs to his family. They bought a ton of ranch country in the 80s in Wyoming and Montana. Trent goes up there and he spends most of his time on the padlock, but back and forth. So that's what they do. Trent's a super good horseman, super good cowboy, phenomenal roper. One of the stories I like to tell him, he's a great bronc rider. Both of them are. Kurt, for as big as he is, really rides a bucking horse way too good. I mean, big men don't ride bucking horses like that, but he gets her done. But Trent was 15 and we were going to town ranch rodeo, and it was like Trent's third ranch rodeo. And we've got a 10 rodeo circuit, the Bighorn Rodeo. And so they have a ranch bronc division. And so we were going to town, and we were about halfway to town, and Trent said, Dad, I hope I draw Blue Jean today. And I said, Trent, nobody rides Blue Jean. She's a little blue roan mare, just lethal. I said, Trent, nobody rides her past the second jump. He said, that's exactly right, Dad. Nobody rides her past the second jump. But he said, I know how to get past the second jump. And he said, after that, I'll get her rode. I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, Dad, when she comes out, I'm going to spur her so hard she forgets to suck back. And darned if he didn't do it. He went to town, he drew Blue Jean, and he spurred that mare so hard those first two jumps, she never sucked back, and he went on and won the rodeo at 15. And that's the way his brain works. When Trent locks in on something, it happens. There's no backup, there's no slowdown. Once he's hooked, he's hooked, and it's gonna happen. So, just phenomenally good kids. I love both of them. 2 weeks from now, they'll be in New Mexico working on a ranch for a few weeks. They go all up and down the Rocky Mountain Range, work in different places. They work work for me when they're not, somebody else doesn't have them. I can't hardly keep them, but we have a pretty neat arrangement. When I was a kid, before I started traveling and doing clinics, I trained horses all my life. So when I took ranch jobs, I never took a job where they wouldn't let me ride my own horses. So I told the boys that, look for those big jobs you want, but where you can ride your own horses for the most part.
Exactly.
And so we have a really good deal. They ride my horses and I pay them to ride my horses, and then they go get jobs and get paid for that too. So it's a pretty good deal.
So your dad was a rancher too?
No, that's a common misconception.
Okay.
If you read my bio, it says I grew up on ranches, and that's true. My dad grew up on a dairy farm outside of Croswell, Michigan, and was a calf roper there. Broke horses, fixed problem horses. Grandpa was a dairy farmer, but he was also a horse trader. Just loved to dabble in horse trading, and he was a good horseman, considered kind of the village vet. They didn't have a vet. He did all of that work. Kind of an old-time, make-your-own liniment type horseman. So dad grew up under his teaching. And then in the 60s, while everybody else was headed to Woodstock, dad headed to Wyoming. Ended up on a ranch in Wyoming in the little town of Lovell where we live now. So he went back and forth to Michigan, was working as a teacher, and spending his summers and holidays in Wyoming. And he got married the very end of 72. And so in the first week in January of 73, they picked up everything and moved to Wyoming. And they moved on to the Tiller Ranch. And so that's where I grew up as a kid. But what my parents actually did, we had horses all my life and small livestock. But what my parents actually did was run a boarding school for troubled kids.
Okay.
And so we had a big house and they were the dorm parents. They started a private school and hired teachers. So I tell everybody I've had 500 brothers. So it worked out pretty good, but that's what they did.
You said something in the competition that really took a hold of me though. You said whenever you was young, you asked your dad for a good horse.
Yep.
Tell that story.
So we went to the county fair, and as a kid growing up, I've always loved horses, always loved them. So we went to the county fair, and this guy went out, kid that was probably 10, 12 years older than me, and he went out. I was probably, he maybe wasn't that much older. I was probably 10 or 11, and he was a senior in high school, and he was in the rain cow horse event, and I watched him ride that horse around and set that horse down and stop him and slide him 6 or 8 feet and turn him around. Maybe if I was back there today watching, I'd think that horse wasn't very broke. But at the time, I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And so at 11 years old, I told my dad one day, I said, Dad, I want a better horse. He said, well, better horses cost money. How much do you have? And I said, not very much. He said, then make yours better. And that started me on the journey I'm still on today. I wanted to make my horse better. And I started trying to figure out how to make my horse ride like that kid's horse had rode. And I didn't have the quality of horse he had. I didn't have the knowledge he had. I suspect now if you go back and look, that horse had been to a trainer and, you know, he wasn't doing it all himself probably. But anyways, that's what started me. And dad had a lot of impact on my career in different times. And then about 25 years ago right now, he asked me one day, he said, he called a trainer by name. He said, I watched this trainer. His horses look different than yours. They look better than yours. And he said, so tell me, what's the difference between you and that trainer? What makes his horses look like that? And I said, Dad, the big difference is that's the quality of horse he's buying. That's the quality of horse that he's spending so much money, more money on that horse, and they're bred different and they move different and they're built different. And Dad looked at me and he said, that sounds like an excuse. If you need a better horse, you probably ought to go buy one. If you know, he said, if you need a better bred horse, go buy one. And so that launched me. Dee Dee and I started talking about it, and we spent 2 years or three looking for what we thought was going to be the horse. We looked all over. We went to the King Ranch. That was really fun. I got to go see little Peppy before he died. And that was a neat experience. We walked in. We were with the horse manager at the time. They let us walk in the pen. And I'm just, you know, cowboy enough that I don't really think about things before I do them. And so little Peppy is just standing there. He was like 27 at the time or something like that. He was an old horse. Looked great. Fleshy, big, pretty horse. You know, not tall, but thick. Just built right. And we walked over to him and he was just gentle as a lamb. And I had Kurt, who was two in my arms, and I didn't even think about it. I just set him up on him, and Dee Dee snapped a couple of pictures, and we never even thought about it. And the horse manager didn't say a word. You know, maybe he was so appalled that we would be that brazen. He was like, you rude people. I don't know what he was thinking. He didn't say a word. So we've got pictures at home of Kurt sitting on little Peppy. And after we left, the people we were staying with, we told them, they said, are you crazy? Like, that's the King Ranch. Like, that's the most influential cow horse sire in the industry. You didn't ask him? I said, no, he was gentle. I just set him up there. I didn't think about it. So I mean, I knew he was broke. What's he going to do? He's 27 years old. Anyways, we went to the King Ranch. We went to Rancho Rosarito in Arizona. We went all over the place looking for this horse. And we were finding lots of cool ones, but not in a budget that a 27-year-old guy could afford. Not me, anyways. I couldn't afford it. And so we were way up north in Washington State, up in the northwest corner of Washington, a little town called Mount Vernon, Washington. And a good friend of mine who hosted a million clinics for me, Terry Cook, she said to me, well, I know a guy that raises some Pepe Sand Badger horses. You want to go look at them? I said, sure. So she took me to this little barn in Bow, Washington. We walked in and I met an old guy. Wasn't that old then, but he's 86 or 7 now. Kurt Storbach. And he had this little black foal in the back barn. We went out and looked at him. They weren't Pepe Sand Badger bred at all. They were San Pepe bred horses. Common mistake. But anyways, we went back and looked at him, and he was nursing the mare, about 3 weeks old. Told him what I wanted. He said, that's the horse you want. And I said, no, sir, he's not. I said, I don't want a baby. I don't have the patience to wait on that. I need a horse right now. I can't wait a couple years. I need that horse right now. Mm-hmm. He said, well, that's the horse. You told me what you want. That's the horse. And so we drove away, and I was pretty disappointed. And we sat on it for 6 months, and I called him up one day, and I said, you still have that colt? He said, yeah, but he said, if you come out here, I got something better than that. So we went out there for a clinic, and I went in the barn, and he said, not only do I have that colt, but he said, I've got his full brother that's a 3-year-old, and he said, I've got his full sister that's a 4-year-old, a full brother that's a 2-year-old, full sisters that are 3 and 4. And he said, I'll sell you the whole batch of them. And I said, what do you want for him? He said, I want $20,000. Well, I didn't have $20,000 to sell. To save my life, I couldn't find $20,000. So I called up a very good friend of mine, who's since passed on. But I called up a very good friend of mine and I said, Jerry, this is the deal. And he said, no problem, Ken. I know you're good for it. It'll be good. And him and I went partners on those horses and we bought them. And I've still got that little 6-month-old foal at home. He's 22 or 3 years old now. Mm. And he changed my life. That horse absolutely changed my life. In fact, we still got the older brother. The two mares are gone. But we've still got the older brother. Dee Dee rode him for years. We sold him twice, and both times, by different scenarios, we ended up getting him back. So in both times, we regretted selling him. Once we sold him to a guy in Alabama, and he went to Alabama. The guy was a very good horseman, but he called me. He said, this horse hates it down here. Hates it. So he just paces in his pen, and the bugs are eating him alive, and he hates it. He said, he's a super nice horse. Really like him, but he hates it. So I traded him out. And we got him back. And then it was probably, like 8 or 10 years later. And some really good friends of ours in Ohio came out and they went on a trip in the mountains with us. They rode him. They said, man, we'd like to have this horse at home. And we said, well, you can do that. And we didn't really want to part with him. We'd had him a long time by then. But we thought that it was the right home for him and they fit him. And they had him about a year or a little longer. And they called and they said, this horse just don't like it here. So he just doesn't get along here. And he works on the ranch so good. He just loves the ranch. And so we bought him back, brought him home, and we'll have him there till he dies. But that was a cool experience that we had, just where God just moves things into your path. It was pretty neat.
Well, speaking of people looking for a ranch horse, we need to talk about what you got coming up.
Yeah, that's a really fun event. So first Saturday in June, we'll have our 16th annual Diamond McNabb Ranch Horse Sale. We've got 85 head of horses cataloged. That's something we started that program now really 18 years ago, almost. We started it. We bought the first horses 18 months ahead of sale day.
Oh, wow.
And rode them through that course. So my partner, Dima True, owns Diamond Ranches. He provides about a third of the horses. And my family and my crew, we provide about a third of the horses. And then we have guest consigners, most of whom started with us.
Okay.
Most of them were people that I sat down and I said, who do I know that ranches for a living that I know I can trust, that's going to be really honest, going to bring me good horses that my customers will like? And so what's different about our sale from any other sale is when you go to an auction, you hear this line all the time, buyer beware, buyer beware, right? It's the buyer's job to take care of himself. Well, we don't do that. For us, we know our buyers frequently have never been to an auction in their life. And so I tell my consigners, it's our job to protect the buyer. It's your job to protect yourself. So if you do your job right, you won't have a problem. But I'm going to protect my buyer. My buyer's coming from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
They come a long way to spend a lot of money. So we're going to protect them. So when we very first started, I said, here's the deal. We give them a 30-day guarantee. That's not a money-back guarantee. That's what we call a satisfaction guarantee. So we will get you a horse that you like if we have one, but your real guarantee is full credit in the next sale we have. So we have a fall sale and a spring sale. So full credit in the next sale we have, up to a year. So if you bought in the fall sale, you can try in the spring sale. And if it doesn't work, you have the fall sale. If you bought in the spring sale, you can try in the fall sale. If it doesn't work, you can buy in the spring sale. So you basically have the option of two other sales. And we have the option, if we have something that we think fits you, to provide that. My consigners all know there is absolutely a solid positive no, a non-no sale rule. If you want to keep this horse at home, don't bring him to my sale. When he comes in that gate, when he goes out the other end, he has a new owner. So I'm not going to have a guy come all the way from Argentina and sit in those stands to bid and then have a consigner tell me, well, I want 250 more. Are you kidding me? This man spent $5,000 just getting here to buy this horse, and he just bid $22,000 and you want $22,500. No. So I tell my consigners, and then the next thing I tell them is, because that's the rule, you will be tempted to bid against my customers. And if I catch you doing that, you will not be on our sale ever again. And we live with a hard and fast rule on that. And one of the things I'm the most proud of, in the very first sale we did, our auctioneer came to me and he said, Ken, he heard me talking to people, telling them the truth about my horses. And he said, I got to talk to you. Come here. And we went off to the side. He said, you got to be quiet. You got to stop. He says, buyer beware. You're ruining your sale. And I said, well, I appreciate your opinion, but this is the way I'm going to run my sale. He said, you can't do it this way. I said, well, tomorrow morning when I get up and I look in the mirror, I'm going to have to shave. And I said, when I shave, I don't want to feel guilty about what I did today. So he said, well, if you do this, this is going to be a one and done. He said, you can start a really neat program here, or you can have a one-time affair. And he said, here's the deal, Ken. He said, at the end of today, you're going to write me a check for $1,000 or 1% of the proceeds, whichever is greater. Now, he said, what's going to happen today is, at the end of the day, you're going to write me a check for $1,000. And I'm going to go home and you're never going to have another sale. And I said, well, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is, but we're still going to run this auction honest. Mm-hmm. So the sale was over. He was getting ready to leave. And my partner, Deemer True, looked at him and said, hey, I've got your check for $1,000. And I was standing with Deemer. He said, absolutely not. I want my 1% and you can run your sale any way you want. 16 years later, he's still our auctioneer. He's 2009 world champion livestock auctioneer. If you run into him anywhere, he will tell you publicly over a microphone that the Diamond McNabb sale is the most honest run horse auction in the United States.
I've never heard anything like that.
No, nobody does it. Nobody does it. And I'm super proud of it. It was something I insisted on early. And as soon as I explained the model to Deemer, he went with it. It fit who he is and who his family is. And people just, they know they can trust us. They know when they get there, we're not out to hurt them.
That's pretty good. I've never heard of a sale that way.
It's a different model. That's for
sure. To be proud of, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Just shows you don't have to be like everybody else.
No.
Stand your ground and do what Ken wants to do.
Yep.
It works.
Yeah. Do what you know is right. I tell my boys all the time, there's nothing worse than knowing you're wrong and going ahead anyways.
No.
Just do what you know is right. It's so much easier.
Tell the people where they can see the catalog.
Okay. So you can find the catalog on Diamond McNabb Ranch Horses, dmranchhorses.com. You can get there at a link from kenmcnabb.com as well.
Okay. And we'll put the links in the YouTube video and on things so people can see it too. So
cool.
That'll be good. Maybe I can come.
Hey, we'd love to have you. We have people who have never missed a year. In 2020 for COVID, we had to do all remote, nobody live. It was a live auction. We aired it online, live streamed it, and you could bid online or call in, but you couldn't come to the building. We couldn't have an in-person auction. We had a man drive all the way from Indiana and watch it in a hotel in town just so he could say he's never missed a year of our sale.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. We have people come all the time who have never missed a year. They come just because it's so much fun. We have a really good time.
What about your clinic schedule? Where can they find that?
The clinic schedule is on kenmcnabb.com.
Okay.
And they can find it there. It's a busy schedule. We put on a lot of clinics, a lot of events throughout the year. And if they go on there, they'll see we've got really, I tell people there's really four things we do. We do expos or shows like Road to the Horse or Equine Affair. We'll be at Equine Affair in a couple of weeks. We do things like that. Then we do the 3-day clinics that we travel around the country and put those on in different towns, different cities. And then we bump up from there to what we call our Trail Rider University, which is a 1-week clinic group. And they come in and we spend half the day in the arena and half the day out in the mountains riding. And then we spend one day out all day in the mountains and have lunch out there. And it's a really great time. And then we jump up to kind of the more serious series of clinics, which is what we've done for years. We have the oldest in-house 3-week apprenticeship program or any apprenticeship program in the country for horsemanship. So you come to the ranch and you spend 3 weeks there. And that's actually an 11-week program that ends up, they stay for the whole 11 weeks and ends up a master certified trainer. So they do 3 weeks there that's not tested. The apprentice level is not tested. Anybody can come. Then if they want to come back for the second level, it's the journeyman level, and that's tested. If you're going to come back for the journeyman level, you can come for it, but you don't get the certification until you've passed the test. And then the same thing for the master level. They come for another 3 weeks. They have to do that 6 months apart. They can't just stack them up. They've got to come over time. Because I wanted to go home and practice. Reaching that level of horsemanship, you got to ride. You got to feel it. Sure. You got to know it's there.
All of your tack, I looked at a lot of, you're using Weaver leather.
I use a lot of Weaver leather. We have a great relationship with Weaver. We've been with Weaver now, I think, seven years. They called me up one day and they said, hey, we've been following you around for the last couple of years. I didn't know that. So we've been watching your television show. We want you to come on as a large spoke in the wheel of Team Weaver. And so we signed on that endorsement deal, and they have been phenomenal.
Oh, wow.
They are really good to us. They treat us really well. Again, one of the things that is important to me is customer service.
Definitely.
And they nail that. If you call Weaver up and you've got a problem with a product, they'll tell you, we'll make it right. They're not out to hurt anybody. That I like that customer service. I like the product. Their products are usable.
Mm-hmm.
They're quality. I remember years ago, I was talking to a guy and he said, well, so-and-so's endorsing these harness leather reins that somebody's making. And I remember all the names he said, I'm intentionally not using them. And I said, oh, you know, I didn't really have a comment. And he said, well, I guarantee if you go back home to their barn, they don't have that junk in their barn. They've got real stuff in their barn. And I never forgot that conversation. And so with Weaver, I tell them, this is what I want. And they'll come back to me and they'll say, well, that's going to take a little while. And I'm like, that's okay. And so we did a bit actually 18 months ago, and they brought it to me, and I looked at it and I said, no, I'm sorry, that does not cut the mustard. And so they just brought it to me again here at Road to the Horse. I just got it out, same bit. I just pulled the prototype out of the box here at Road to the Horse and said, hey, nailed it. Yet now we're where we need to be on quality. The bit's right. Everything is good. So I like that. I like that they care that much, that they went through that process over and over again until they got it right.
Definitely.
So that means a lot to me. That's somebody that cares about their reputation, their product. And one of the neat things about Weaver, I'm a bit of a skeptic and I try to be real positive all the time. But the reality is I can have a pessimistic view on things at times.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I toured Weaver, I went around and they gave us a tour of the whole shop. And that's like hundreds of Amish ladies working in there. Mm-hmm. And I thought, holy smokes, here we are, legalized sweatshop labor in America. That's what this has got to be. Now go back 8 years, okay, from now, 7, 8 years ago from now. So you're looking 2016, something like that. We're in there 2016, 2017. After we go around the whole thing, I looked at Myron Stutzman. He was giving me the tour. And I said, what's the starting wage here? Because I'm thinking sweatshop labor. Oh, he said, starting wage your first day a week is $15 an hour. It shocked me to no end. There was no sweatshop labor going on. So then I started talking to the people working in there. And every one of them, big smile. I love it here. I love my job. I have the best job in the world. I work for the best company in the world. Every one of them had a great attitude. Two of the other things they told me that was really, I think, important to the success of their company. And this goes to Paul Weaver, who was just a brilliant, godly man, great businessman, really understood what he was doing. Myron Stutzman was the oldest Weaver employee, both been there the longest. He'd been there since Paul's dad started it in 1973, but he was also aged the oldest. And he gave every new employee or prospective employee a tour. And they have a big ramp that goes from the third floor down to the top floor. And they climb, the building is built on a hill. And so it climbs up this ramp. So they told me, they said, two things happened during the interview. Myron takes you on this walk. And when Myron gets to the top of that ramp, he turns around. And if you're more than two steps behind him, you don't get the job. If you can't keep up to an old man climbing a hill, we don't need you here. That's simple. Boom, done. You either work, you don't show up. The other thing that's going on, he said, while you're in here, I send somebody out to walk around your car. And if your car is dirty and full of junk, I don't care if it's dinged, bent, dented up and old, but if your car is covered up in dirt and mud, nobody's cared, nobody's washed the windows and the back seat's full of junk, if you don't care enough to keep your own stuff good, you won't take care of mine either. You don't get the job.
I wouldn't get the job.
No. I said after we left, Thank God he didn't come to the ranch to look at my pickup. I'd have been in trouble. But I thought it was pretty cool that they, you know, on one hand, they're that strict. And on the other hand, they've got all those people saying this is the greatest place in the world to work.
That's good.
Once the rules are set, the rules are the rules.
What about your saddles you're selling?
So my saddles are private labeled for me. Company down in Texas makes them all to my specifications. They set them up the way I ask them to do it. And that's another deal. When we started, I'm very particular on the seats of my saddles. And one of the things I love about my saddles is that people walk into my booth and they sit in my seats. And the first thing you're going to notice is that we sell about 99.8% hard seat saddles. I might sell two soft seat saddles a year if I'm lucky. I don't build soft seat saddles because I don't believe in them. And so I will have women come into my booth and they'll say, oh, I need padding. And I tell them, actually, in my experience, God gave us all the padding we need. Sit down on that saddle and see what you think. And even my own wife at first was like, I don't know, we need padding. And I finally said, just ride it. And she rode it. You couldn't give Dee Dee a padded seated saddle now for love nor money. She doesn't want a padded seated saddle. People sit in the seats of those saddles. And so when we started that, they would send me a saddle and I'd ride it and I'd send it back to them, tell them, no, I don't like it. It's hitting here, it's hitting there. And so we went through several saddles like that. And finally they sent me one and called them back. And I said, you nailed it. Now don't lose it.
Keep it.
Don't lose it. Because each one of those saddles has a hand-built ground seat. There is a couple of men in there sanding those seats, adding more leather, gluing it in, sanding those seats, adding more leather, gluing it in, sanding those seats. Every one of those seats is hand-built by somebody. When you walk in the factory, there is a couple of presses and a couple of sewing machines. When I say presses, we're cutting out leather pieces. Mm-hmm. Every stamp, every tool, every carving on that saddle is hand done. There's nothing there where we've got basket weave, just press out an 18-inch piece of basket weave. Every single piece of that basket is done. And those ladies are in there, and I mean, I can't move my hands as fast as those girls move their hands. And they are whacking it. That's, again, that's down in Texas.
Oh, cool.
But I'm really proud of those saddles. They're super comfortable. The one complaint we have, and we just whipped this one. I'm really proud of this new line of saddles we just came up with. But for years, everybody has said, and including my wife, why do they have to be so heavy? They're so heavy. And I tell them all, because when my grandkids pick them up, I want them to be, number one, proud of what's left of that saddle, and two, able to use it. If you're going to have a saddle that lasts generations, it has to have quality. Quality is weight.
Yeah.
So what we did, we argued with it and fought with it for years. I started private labeling these saddles 12, 13 years ago. For all of those years until 8 months ago, I fought with how can I strip the saddle down and not lose quality, but lose weight. Finally, 8 months ago, we prototyped the Streamline Ranch Cutter. And we love the Streamline Ranch Cutter. And women walk in and they look at it. It looks real. It looks cowboy and they can lift it.
Wow.
And it's strong. My wife can pick hers up. I mean, Dee Dee's 5'2", weighs 100 and nothing. And she walks in and picks hers up. I've saddled her horse our whole married life. And in the last 8 months, she started saddling her own horse and told me, I love it. I love it. I can saddle my own horse. I'm not to wait around on you.
That's good.
So, yeah. So I'm really proud of our saddle line. That's a piece that's 100% on us. The guarantee is through us. The tree guarantee is through us. I have complete control of it. And that happened because saddle endorsements were tough for me. Saddle companies are either really big, or on the edge of going broke all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just easier for me to just say, let's just find somebody that'll do this. And we pay for the saddles, we pay them for the labor, but they lived to our specifications.
What's your main piece of advice for somebody wanting to start riding ranch horses and doing what y'all do?
You know, don't quit early. To me, one of the things that we say lighthearted around home, like you take too much pie at Thanksgiving and I'm going to look at you and say, quitting early shows a weakness of character, finish that pie. But we also mean it. We don't mean it over the pie. We joke about it. But quitting early shows a weakness of character. Don't quit early. Don't doubt yourself. That doesn't mean don't stay open to advice. That's what I told you, you know, when we first started talking. One of the things I thought was the coolest about C.D. Wilcox was his willingness to seek out and follow advice from anybody. Anybody. But when you've started into something, don't give up. Don't give up. We did that film piece where I talked about my dad telling me, whatever your dreams are, count the cost.
Mm-hmm.
As long as morally and ethically it's right, legally right, go get your dreams. Don't worry about how much financially it costs. Don't worry about that. Go get your dreams. And I believe that. I honestly believe, don't let anything stop you. This is America.
Yeah.
In America, we can do what we start out to do.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that holds us back is us. So if you're that kid that wants to train and show AQHA ranch horses, one of the things that just popped into my head, summer I was 13 years old, I sent a letter to the AQHA and a letter to the BLM. I sent them both a letter at the same time because I had this idea in my head and I wanted to know if it's possible. I wanted to raise really good quarter horses. So I sent a letter to the BLM to to ask him how to adopt multiple horses. And then I sent a letter to the AQHA asking them if it was possible to register a BLM horse. Well, obviously the answer was no.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted was to raise really good quarter horses. Today, we raise 15 to 20 quarter horse colts a year. So my partner raises another 30, maybe 40 some years. So for me, that was at 13 years old. That was a target. And my first idea of getting there wasn't a good idea. And the answers I got back were disappointing. For me, a 13-year-old kid, I had no idea that this horse needed 40 years of bloodlines behind him, you know. And obviously, thank God that that was the answer. That's what a stud book's all about. But at that age, I didn't understand all that. So I just had to sit down and say, okay, redraw the plan. Come back, redraw the plan. Figure out how to do this. That's what I would tell that person. When you hit a wall, you hit something that looks like a blockade, go around. Find another way. There is another way to do this. Don't be easily defeated. Don't just go, oh, bother, I can't do it. If you believe you can't do it, then you can't do it. But if you believe in your heart you can do it, then you can wholeheartedly go after it and go get it.
Definitely. Is your show still airing on RFD?
It is still airing. They're airing reruns.
Okay.
But we aired new shows. Originally, when we started on RFD TV, we did 46 shows a year. We did four reruns a year. Normally, the week after a major holiday, we would run a rerun. That got very tiring. And so then we dropped down to 26 shows a year, you know, 24 to 26 shows a year. And eventually, that got very tiring. And so then we dropped down to 17 shows a year. After 17 years of doing that, we just finally came to a point where we said, this has been fun. RFD was at the same point, kind of with us. They said, we'd like to move you to a different time slot. And so we negotiated back and forth. And at that same time, I got really great opportunities to work with Bala Productions out of Hollywood to work on the Ultimate Cowboy series, the series I mentioned earlier, the Guts and Glory show. Those opportunities came up. And we were negotiating with RFD for the next season. RFD said, you can't do RFD and those. We've had a lot of fun on RFD, but I'm a person that likes to change. I like to have adventure. So we went with Bala Productions. So we did two seasons of Ultimate Cowboy, one season of Guts and Glory. And then they also had me in the show as an expert on stage coaches. I love draft horses. I love driving. I'm a driving fanatic. I broke horses to drive all my life. My dad used to do a driving school that was really a wagon train. So when they asked me if I would do the stagecoach show, I said, heck yeah, that'll be a ton of fun. Those are the projects we've done since then. Right now, we're working on developing a pitch with Bala Productions for another really cool show. I'm super excited about it. I can't talk about it. And it's one of those daydreams with pie in the sky. It may never happen.
That's the way that works. Rest horses for that show.
We know where to get them. All right.
We just got done doing that draft horse clinic in Billings.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger generation, it was unreal. Our people that was at, I had five participants in the arena with me. It was all girls under 30.
Yep.
These young women are wanting to drive and they dig in and they learn.
Yep.
And we had a great clinic out in Billings. We're doing one in September at Prefort in Texas with Eddie Prefort down at
Dallas. Cool.
We did it last year down there. Prefort, they're so good to us. Yeah. They're great people. But the driving horse world is just on fire.
It's on fire. The whole horse industry is on fire, but that driving horse world is, I believe it's the fastest growing element in the horse industry.
This year already, we've sent teams to Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, Alberta, all the way California, all over the U.S. We've sold like 27 teams this year so far.
Wow.
Have you ever seen the horse industry as good as it is today?
Oh, no. With or without inflation makes no difference. People keep asking me why. What's going on? What's happening? Well, I think COVID was a real big blessing in disguise, but it was also the perfect storm. I don't want to say this out loud. I don't know how to say this. I'm not a real huge Yellowstone fan.
I understand.
My moral character and Yellowstone's moral character, they just kind of go that way. But Taylor Sheridan has turned the horse world upside down. That's my opinion. My opinion is Yellowstone is the bonanza of 2020. If you go back to the 70s, we were watching Lauren Green, Michael Landon, we were watching the Cartwrights, and that really carried all of the TV Western era, that carried the horse industry for a long time. And then it really slumped for a lot of reasons. But when you couple first couple seasons of Yellowstone with everybody locked at home, stuck on COVID, and the horse industry, and then add in the third element, you know, you've got thunder, the lightning, and now the rain, is that at the exact same time, you have an all-time low in horse numbers in the U.S.
It's unreal.
Unreal. You probably were in Holmes County, Ohio a couple of years ago when Belgian colts, weaning Belgian colts that weren't even good confirmation, were bringing $3,000 and $4,000 a piece to be shipped overseas as weaning colts. That there was a year before that, those colts had no value. And all of a sudden, they were $3,500 to $7,000 a piece, and they were shipping them overseas. Well, when they did that, there went a whole whack of draft horses right off. Yeah. And so I said then, not knowing how real it would be with COVID, I said then, imagine if all of a sudden we couldn't buy a new pickup anymore. What would happen to the truck market? Well, look what's happened to it. I mean, you're selling used trucks for that price of a house. Mm-hmm. Well, that happened. You know, all of a sudden the Amish were panicked. Where are we going to get the horses we need? That hit them hard. It changed the whole draft horse industry in the United States dramatically. You took out a whole class of horses just gone for 1 year. Well, same thing in the saddle horse industry happened when they shut down the slaughter plants in 2009. When President Obama took office, he shut down all the slaughter plants. That wasn't a good thing, but it wasn't as bad a thing as we kind of thought. Mm-hmm. It's a tough spot for me. I'm not anti-slaughter, but not every horse needs to go to a slaughterhouse either. There's a time and a place. But what happened is people stopped breeding irresponsibly. And that was a problem. We had a problem. People were breeding irresponsibly. And they were saying, oh my word, wouldn't I love to breed my Shetland pony to that thoroughbred stud and see what happened. Why? Would you do that? Like, why? Well, I'm afraid we're about to go back there. Mm-hmm. Because what's happened is from 2009 to 2022, nobody bred. The AQHA just kept going down, down, down in registration numbers. Foals registered every year. It just kept getting lower. Well, now all of a sudden, last year and this year, we're breeding again. Cool thing about the horse industry is it's not like the cow market. Cow market, they announce, oh my word, our numbers are low. The cow market's high. Great. Everybody keeps their heifer calves. Next year they calve and we triple the cow numbers. We're back in business. In the horse industry, you're 4 or 5 years away before that horse actually steps into the mainstream market. So yeah, the horse market's crazy right now and it's a perfect storm. Thank you, Taylor Sharon. It was a good timing.
You even see it like at our local sale down at home. We used to have 150, 200 horses ever once a month on Thursday night. Now, less than 20 horses.
Yep.
There's no junk either.
You mentioned Billings. I used to go to Billings Livestock and you would watch 1,200 head of horses a month. Mm-hmm. And they'd have 600-700 head in the catalog. Now, in February, at their big sale, the Sons and Daughters sale in February, they'll get 400 or 500 head. The rest of the year, they're looking at 150 head of horses, plus their loose horses. The numbers aren't there. They just aren't. And find me that six-year-old gelding. He doesn't exist in the market anymore because 6 years ago, nobody was breeding. He's impossible to find. So yeah, the market's amazing. It's really great.
I mean, we're selling two-year-old teams right now. All the time, 2 and 3 year olds.
Right. That we couldn't give away.
Totally.
We couldn't give away 2 and 3 year old horses because nobody wanted a young horse because they want that age and that maturity. Well, right now you have a choice. You can have 1 foot in the grave, the other one on a banana peel,
mm-hmm.
or a 2 or 3 year old horse.
That's right.
And it's the same in the saddle horse market, the draft horse market. The hard part is anytime you have that desperate market, you have that spot where somebody can go out and screw somebody. But as long as we're doing a good job presenting the horses, training the horses correctly, bringing them along right, then that three-year-old's fine. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at because that six-year-old just doesn't exist. He's not out there.
We sold a three-year-old team to the U.S. Army.
Yeah.
In San Antonio to pull their caisson and stuff. Yep. They used them at the rodeo the San Antonio rodeo.
Yeah.
If they're trained right, they'll work.
That's right. I said yesterday at Road to the Horse, horses, dogs, and children only need to be tired once in a while. It teaches them to control their own emotion and to have manners. And so if those horses have had a job, they know, just chill out. Just
exactly.
Hang out here. So you don't have to abuse them or wear them out. But if they've learned the value of rest, then they're easy to stop. They're easy to control because they're looking for that break.
Ken, we're not having a Kentucky night till we open this L8.
I've been waiting. I've been kind of getting anxious here.
This is green glass bottled in the bluegrass. So Kentucky soda. Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers.
Hey, that's good.
That is really good stuff.
It's great.
I told my kids the other day, I said, you haven't been in Kentucky until you got yourself an L8.
Well, you know the guys at J.W. Brooks? I took them one yesterday morning, both of them. Lehman and J.W., I said, yep. You've got to drink this.
Yeah, you haven't been in Kentucky if you didn't get an L8. I used to work with the kids out at Asbury University.
Okay.
And they made sure I was introduced to AOA every time I come to town. So
you've did quite a bit in the bluegrass state.
I have. Yeah. Honestly, I told Dee Dee on the way over here today, I said, you know, I love where we live, but if I could live someplace else, I might live right here in Lexington. It's beautiful country.
My wife's from Laurel, Montana.
Oh, yeah.
She moved here. She said, I still love Montana.
Right.
But I think I like it here, too.
Yeah, that's the deal. It's beautiful here.
Who's the customer that buys your horses? Like, what type of customers are you selling to?
You know, that's a great question. We call it a ranch horse sale because they are ranch horses. And to me, the ranch horse has been to the war. He's seen the battle and he's experienced. And so what that does is you're not going to show him something he hasn't already seen. So for the customer who is that backyard pleasure rider, for lack of a better phrase, he's the perfect horse because he's been there, done that, and he's experienced. People ask me all the time, well, if he's a ranch horse, what's your percentage of horses go to ranches? Well, what percentage go to competition homes? And I would tell you that probably 75% of our horses end up in the pleasure market, in the backyard, enjoyable market, not necessarily pleasure competitive. Then I would tell you another 15% of our horses, give or take 15 to 20%, end up on ranches somewhere actively working. And so we try to rate our horses, you know, we try to be really honest as we represent them. And we'll tell people this horse done every job on the ranch, but what he really wants to do is trail ride. So that guy that shows up that's a rancher, we want him to know, look, can you work cattle on him? Yes. Is he a cow horse? No. He's a horse you can work cattle on, but it's you doing it, not him. But then we do the same on the other side. We'll say, you know, this horse is straight up a cow horse. If you want one that's going to turn out from underneath you the next time old Bossy turns back, then you better have a hold of a saddle horn because he's going, you know. Mm-hmm. So we don't want that person who's looking for, you know, that once a month trail horse to take home a horse that is a big time cow horse that really wants to work and is going to dump them on their head. We want to represent them honestly. So I'd say, you know, another 15 plus, give or take a little bit, percent of our horses actually end up at working ranches where they're actually working for a living. Surprisingly enough, sometimes those horses are some of the higher end horses that end up working environments. Oil in the Dakotas has changed ranching like it did in Texas. They say cattle never breed as well as they do in the shadow of a pump jack. And that's a true statement. You know, I mean, you get an oil pump on the place and money starts moving a little better, which is a great thing for ranchers. And then I would say about 10% roughly, give or take a little bit, end up in competitive markets.
Okay.
And in those horses, most of those, now the market I didn't talk about, the customer I didn't talk about, we send a lot of fox hunt horses back east.
Yep.
I love the fox hunt. I've been several times and it's perfect. And so we wrangle horses all the time. Horses are used to driving a bunch of horses in front of them. They don't get hot. They don't get stupid. They're big. They're sturdy. They're steady. They're sound. So we send a lot of fox hunt horses back east. Our performance type horses, we're going to sell mostly into the AQHA riding program, the ranch versatility program, ranch riding, ranch trail, those type of things. So that kind of breaks down who our customer is and what they're doing with the horses. We have a small group of people looking for competitive rope horses. Both of my boys are avid ropers, and we're sort of building that as we go. That's something we're just bringing along slowly and building. They bring in some pretty nice horses.
Awesome. Ken, thank you. We appreciate it. I enjoyed this.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
This worked out perfect.
You bet.
To the horse, come over and do it. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys, thank you all for listening. We sure appreciate you. And remember, Ken's sale, June, first weekend in June?
Yep, first Saturday in June.
And if you need any information, www.kenmcnabb.com. And you can also check out our website, Hayes Draft Horses and Mules. It's www.drafthorsesandmulesforsale.com. Until the next one, thank you all, and we'll see you soon.
As another captivating episode of Harness Up with Haste Draft Horses and Mules draws to a close, we extend our sincere gratitude to our listeners for joining us on this enlightening journey. We hope today's discussions have deepened your appreciation and understanding of these magnificent creatures. Remember, the adventure continues beyond this podcast. Stay connected with us on social media and share your stories. For more information and to explore further, visit DraftHorsesAndMulesForSale.com. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, keep harnessing your curiosity and passion for these God-given creatures. Farewell for now.